From Podcast Detroit Studios in the heart of the Motor City, it's time for your source for Blue Collar Talk, the ARC Junkies podcast. Here's your host, Jimmy McKnight.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 29 of ARC Junkies. I'm your host, Jimmy McKnight, and I am joined in studio by my friend Dave Tonegato. What's going on, Dave?
What's up, man? Thanks for having me back.
Hey, anytime, man. Anytime. We are also joined in studio by the Candy Crab, the infamous Candy Crab. You just made this thing. What, did you finish it yesterday?
Yeah, I just finished it yesterday.
Yeah? No, all right. We've posted it on Instagram right now so everybody can kind of see exactly what this thing looks like. But let's kind of describe it to them real quick. You've got legs made out of, what is this, rebar?
Yeah, rebar.
And then what is the body itself made out of?
The body was like some like cup coasters or something I seen at the thrift store, and I just thought they'd work good for the body. You know,
yeah,
they're kind of shaped and rounded. And
it's cool looking, man. I absolutely love it. And I think the decision to do the actual like candy coat on it just totally set it
off. Yeah, it was a tough decision because I like the bare metal, but I'm glad I did it.
Man, it feels so good to be in here. I haven't been in here since the last time you were in here. The show kind of went through a restructuring. Like, I took a week off because I wanted to create the new intros and get things kind of ready because we have lots of announcements for the show. There's lots of things that are happening. And then I got sick. So there's been 2 weeks without an actual ARC Junkies episode for everybody. And I want to say thank you to everybody that actually sent me the get well wishes. That was much appreciated because, dude, it's so miserable when you're sick. Especially, yeah, like, I don't get sick often. I get sick, like, once a year. But when I do, it's so bad.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm, like, it is 100% true that women are stronger than men. Because my whole house got it. My little baby girl, she got it first, but she was good within like 6 hours. You know, we took her to the hospital. They gave her medicine. She was good within 6 hours. The next morning, my wife got it. She was sick for 3 days. I got it after my wife had it for like 2 days, and then I was down for four.
Yeah, you were bedridden for like a week.
Like the whole time. Like, I'm the one that had it the longest and the worst, you know? And then it's like, I kind of felt like a little bit of a bitch because like on that fourth day, like everybody else is fine, and I'm still like laying in bed all like, I'm miserable. This is horrible. It sucks. But yeah, man, it's good to be back in here. It's good to dust the mics off and actually like get the show back to going again, because I know I missed being here. I miss being here like absolute crazy. This time that we took off, though, like a lot of little different things happened. Like, Michigan is plagued with these horrible roads at the moment. All of these potholes are here like absolute crazy. People are like, personally myself, I've had to replace 2 tires already on the same car. And it happened 2 days in a row. Like, my wife was driving my car and she went to go see her mom, and on her way back, hit a pothole, flattened the tire. So I changed the tire. I put the donut on it. It was an emergency. She had to go back down there to see her mom to do something. Hits the donut, almost the same pothole. Boom. There's 2 tires gone because of these potholes, man.
Yeah, the roads are terrible. Like, I haven't had any flat tires or anything, knock on wood, but like, I drive down the roads and I drive old hoopty, so I'm always thinking my car's falling apart. I'm like, is this a bumpy road or something wrong with my truck? Like, everything's clunking and
right.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Yeah, it's bad, dude. It is bad. Moving on to announcements. This show is now officially sponsored by ESAB Welding and Cutting Products. I'm extremely excited about this. And even furthermore, so beginning in April, ARC Junkies will be presenting Filler Metal Fridays. And it will be 100% sponsored by ESAB, where basically once a month, we're going to be putting out a show that highlights filler metals that ESAB make. And we're going to be talking to the guys that actually, are in the lab developing these filler rods. And we're going to talk about all the different uses about what these filler rods do, which is pretty cool because, you know, this show is, it's very banter based. It's very, you know, just kind of come in and chat about, you know, life, what we welded this week and, you know, just things that we're dealing with. It's not very, in the educational realm. It's more of the entertain and inspire versus educate. So I'm very excited about this because this Filler Metal Friday is really going to kind of push the show more into the educational aspect of podcasting, and people are going to hopefully get a little bit more out of what actually Arc Junkies does. So I'm pretty excited about that.
I actually had no idea ESOB made filler metals. I thought they just made welders, so it'll work out good for
everybody.
For both sides.
Yeah, right, right.
I had no idea.
I know. I mean, and it's pretty cool too, man. And I recently just picked up the ESOB 215i. And this is a multi-process welder, and I mean, it's got a lot of really cool features. It's got a smart MIG feature on it where you just put in the size of the material that you're welding, and it sets everything for you. Yeah, it sets everything for you. It's really cool. It runs real smooth. It's like a 110, or it has an adapter. You can plug it in for 220.
Yeah, that's
and I think you can weld up to like 3/8 inch. With that, which is, I mean, that's not bad. In one pass, 3/8 inch, that's pretty good.
So what other processes does it do? It does MIG and TIG?
It does MIG, it does stick, and it does lift arc TIG. It's not high frequency start.
Yeah.
And this is a little weird because I've never really messed with lift arc TIG till now.
Yeah.
And basically, well, all you do is it comes with a Tweco torch and it has a little button on it. And basically, you just make contact with your tungsten and your base metal, hit the button, and then when you lift your tungsten from the base metal, that's what creates the arc. It's almost like a scratch start, but you're not scratching and contaminating your tungsten.
Yeah.
You know, you're just lifting it up and it starts. That's actually, I mean, it seems to be extremely responsive. Plus, there's the ability to be able to actually like upslope and downslope in the actual machine. So you can set your settings to where when you lift up, it takes a second to go up. And there's like a two-step upslope and a four-step two-step slope and a four-step slope that you can set for going up or going down on it. So
that's pretty cool.
It's pretty nice, man. It's pretty nice.
You've been playing with it a lot yet? Or?
You know, honestly, I got everything and I got it all. I got it all unwrapped and I was checking it out and I've had it in my truck to mess with it at work because where I'm at, I'm in an apartment right now, so I don't have like my own little cool space that I can actually mess with it. So I got everything ready to go to work. But it's, we've been so like just crazy at work. I haven't had the chance, but this week I'm making like tomorrow, I'm making a 100% dedicated time. Like I'm going to take the 45-minute lunch break and just mess with the welder, and get in there and like really kind of try to play with that lift stark TIG. Cause that's cool to me.
It
I mean, it's
cool.
New, you know, I've always been spoiled with the high frequency. So having the lift start is going to be kind of like a little bit of a learning curve. You know what I mean? What's the you said you're working with you have Everlast, right?
Yep.
What Everlast did you pick up?
Everlast 210. I actually found it used. That's what kind of led me to buy that. But I, you know, seen them online from time to time and, like, I didn't know what I was trying to buy. Like, there's so many different options with TIG welders. Like, I've TIG welded at work, but I never had to buy, like, know all these different features. You know, I just had one at work, a really old Miller one, but it was just there, and I used it. So I never had to think when I went to buy one. I'm like, heck, I didn't know there's so many different things to look at.
But you're like, happy with it, though, so far?
Yeah, I'm, like, so happy with it. For, like, the art stuff I do, like, like the starting arc, and that was something like I read on the reviews. It's like it'll start an arc at like 3 amps, which seems like it wouldn't matter in a lot of stuff, but like the little art stuff, like even this crab, like the body's a little cup coaster. And it's so thin, you know, and it's
but it works though.
Yeah, second you put like any type of heat to it, it's just melting away. Especially trying to put like the rebar to it, so it's good like that. The low amps, you know.
Mm-hmm. I've talked to a couple guys about the Everlast welders and. You know, everybody, it's pretty general consensus that everybody's saying, the Everlast welders themselves are great welders, especially for, what you're paying. It's so much bang for your buck. The only issue they were saying was like the hardware or everything that comes with it is what kind of was, leaving a lot to be desired. You know, the actual like, regulators and torches and things, the actual hardware that came with it, seemed to be a little bit on the cheap side. Did you kind of, is that something that you came across or were you pretty happy with all
of it? I just used everything that came with it and I've been like super happy with it.
Really? Really?
I mean, I'm no expert. Well, I mean, I've been welding my whole life, but I only know what I know. I'm like self-taught, and I use this really old Miller at work, this giant thing that you probably need a high load to move around. So it's like this thing seemed awesome compared to that. You know?
Yeah. Man, I used this one welder at a job I was at. It was a giant Miller. I don't even remember what kind it actually was, but this thing was so huge. It reminded me, like the instrument panel on it reminded me of that scene from Back to the Future where Marty McFly's like plugging in the guitar and he's turning up all the knobs, you know, to hit the
million knobs.
Yeah, there's like all these million knobs, and they're so huge too. It's just like literally you could like tune in Tokyo, you know, feel like when you're sitting there making your settings with this kind of stuff. So we've really come a long way in the technology from the giant old school welders to almost being able to do that exact same thing with all of these new inverters that are coming out. And I kind of want to I would really like to do a whole show on just all of the different inverters coming out. Like, obviously, we'll feature the ESAB one. They're a new sponsor. But I'd like to go through everybody's, you know, inverter and kind of like take the plus and minuses of each one, the good and the bad, and weigh it all out and which one's going to be the best bang for your buck. You know, because even though now, like, yes, we are sponsored by ESAB, that does not mean that we're just going to be trying to sell everybody ESAB products.
Yeah, we can't talk about anything else.
Yeah, no, that's not the case whatsoever. You know, if ESAB has a product that I think is faulty in some way, we're going to say, oh, this probably could, you know, have a little bit of improvement here where this product seems to be a little bit better. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. There's going to be give and take in our reviews. That's what's going to keep the credibility of this show golden. You know what I mean? But I really would. I would like to get my hands on a few of these different inverter machines to kind of just see, you know, the plus and minuses on them. Because it seems like even though ESAB has the Smart MIG technology, it seemed like a couple other companies also had that same type of technology, just it was labeled differently. Yeah. You know what I mean? And it seemed like everybody, they all knew everybody was doing this. They all knew everybody was making these inverter machines. So they all kind of came up with their own things and their own baseline of everything that they had. But you know just as well as I do that some are going to be better than others in different aspects. And if there's one just king machine, which I highly doubt that there's just one awesome inverter that beats everybody else's, there's going to have to be some give and take between all of them. But I would like to get my hands on them just to kind of to do the demos.
Try them out, yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
my question is on those Smart MIGs, can you go outside of that if you wanted to? Like, can you pick your own settings? You know what I'm saying?
Oh, like, yeah, yeah.
Because, like, with a lot of the art stuff I do, I might not want to do what you would call a proper weld. Like,
exactly.
If I'm building something, like, you know, more wire and less voltage than I would need because I'm trying to build something up or write something. Like, it's not a...
Right. You're not necessarily trying to get the penetration.
Like, I'm trying to make art over structure, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So you can change it outside of that if you want.
Absolutely, yes, yes. You can absolutely do that. I think in the when you're actually in the Smart MIG mode, and I'm just going off of what I read on the thing briefly, but I'm pretty sure when you're in just the Smart MIG mode, it's going to decide for you, but you can go into your own MIG settings and make whatever settings you want to weld whatever you're
doing.
That's cool. You know, so yeah, I mean, it's a pretty good machine, man. I you know, when I look at a machine, one of the big things that are a giant seller to me is how the wire is fed, you know, especially if, you know, on a MIG machine. Like, I can tell right from the design that, you know, Miller has like that direct line, you know, it goes under. ESAB, it goes under, it goes right into it, no problem. And then you'll get on like a Lincoln, and for some reason it feeds over. And then there's this little mechanism inside the actual housing that kind of keeps everything straight. So it's not a direct line, this little, you know, mechanism inside the wire.
Lining it up.
It lines it up. Yeah. And it's just one more thing. And it's honestly, it's useless. It's useless. And it causes more problems, especially if you're running that thing for 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. I mean, just like anything you're running like that, you know, you're going to do some wear and tear on it, but having just one extra mechanism in there always just seemed to cause such an issue, man. Oh my God. I was breaking wire more using a Lincoln MIG welder just because of that little mechanism they had in their wire feed system than I have with any other wire feed system ever, period.
Yeah.
It was, oh my God.
And I know there's nothing worse when you're in the middle of something and a wire breaks. And I used to get that
constantly.
We had these ancient We had a Miller and a Lincoln, but I mean, they're same thing. They're like, you need a high low to move them. I don't know what they're called. And they got these big crank dials, and it's like so hard to get it dialed in. And
right.
They had the separate wire feed. Like, it wasn't all in one. It would like sit on top of the machine, and then people come and set stuff up there where it's hitting your wire and all kinds of stuff.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It seems like they were always breaking. And
you ever go cut your buddy's wire? While he's sitting there welding,
no.
Like, cut his spool.
No. I guess I was bad being a welder. I'd mess with people. Like, the guy that ran this automatic welding machine by me one time, he did something to my welder. He went to break, and I welded his coffee cup right to the table, like, put, like, a piece of rod through the handle so yeah. He could get the grinder to get it off. Figured I'd get him back that way.
That's awesome. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be joined on the ARC Junkie Lines by Joel Bushman and Thomas of Cold Hard Art and Overkill Racing and Chassis. All right, and we are back. Ladies and gentlemen, joining me on the phone lines is Thomas Patsitz of Cold Hard Art and Joel Bushman of Overkill Racing and Chassis. Guys, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
How's it going? Thanks for having us.
You guys got to actually work together for a project on Diesel Brothers where you built the C10 that was just absolutely slammed and gorgeous. And I kind of want to talk to you guys a little bit about that at first, and then we'll kind of break off into what you guys do each individually. So what was the experience like, and how did that all kind of come to fruition where you ended up working together on a project for the Diesel Brothers?
Heck yeah. Well, I guess Joel do it. Yeah. So I guess I was kind of the ringleader on that build. Diesel Brothers TV show that airs on the Discovery Channel Monday nights. We're actually in between filming the third and fourth season right now. But that C10 that you're talking about, that was on the third season. And what's kind of crazy is that, I guess take a quick step back with most reality TV shows, you know, stuff's built, probably about 6 months before it actually airs. And then they have 6 months to edit it and, you know, produce the episode. And they usually do it in a timely manner. Well, in this case, that truck, and Tom can attest to this, that truck was built and it was aired, I think, like 2 weeks later. So that's actually why Tom and a couple other guys got involved in the build, is we were sitting there, myself, the producer of the show, Heavy D, Sparks, and Diesel Dave, the guys that are the Diesel Brothers, and we were trying to figure out what the heck we were going to do to get this C10 done. And, you know, I kind of jokingly said, man, you know, we're going to have to bring an army of, you know, talented fabricators in to get this thing done if we want to try and get it done in time to finish out the third season. And they kind of told me, well, do what you got to do, make some phone calls, see who you can get to come out. So they gave me basically five guys that I could bring. And so they actually only wanted three people to come out. And so that's what's kind of funny, is that I figured I'd call five people. And I was like, well, maybe two people will say no, or, you know, the scheduling won't work. And so, you know, you got to have a little bit of a backup plan. And sure enough, I called. Tom was number one. He was the first guy that I wanted. And the reason I wanted Tom is that he could help me with some of the chassis stuff due to what he's done previously with Don Schumacher, as well as a lot of his intricate artwork I thought would transition over great with this one-off build. And then I called Mark Winchester, which is Winchester Metalworks, does a lot of valve cover stuff, and then he does some really cool turbo piping. And so that C10 had a really intricate compound turbo setup, so we need to do some plumbing and some exhaust work. I called Cody with Quarter Tilt Creations, who does a lot of really, really intricate sheet metal work. And so we had to make, you know, some radiator stuff and some other things. And then I called the Engel brothers, Greg and David Engel, because they're really good at doing sheet metal work for the floors and stuff like that. So I had my five guys that kind of had slightly overlapping skill sets, but it wasn't, you know, two guys that are really good welders, but that's all they're good at. You know, they all kind of had their own stuff that they were specifically good at. So it ended up being one of those that everyone said yes. And so we brought all these guys out, and they all did a really, really good job. And I was blown away by Tom's specific ability to kind of just throw him in the deep end, and he was able to swim. It didn't matter what task I kind of threw him at. He was able to handle it with relatively no problem. And he worked phenomenally with the Engel brothers. And I kind of put them in a hard spot because that C10, we built a full tube chassis, but then we also built a roll cage that was integrated into it. And I came up with a brilliant idea to make the roll cage non-removable, basically make a fully modular floor, which sounds great on paper until you actually have to do it. And Tom can probably speak more into that. I kind of threw this task at those three, and I hate to say just walked away, but, you know, fully expected them to come up with something, you know, that was functional, that was going to work, and they absolutely just blew it away. I couldn't believe how good it ended up turning out. So that's kind of the Reader's Digest version as to how it all kind of came together. But we were basically roommates for what, man, 4 weeks, 5 weeks, something like that, Tom. Yeah, we were working together. Yeah, day in and day out, long, long hours, double-digit hours for 5 weeks straight, and living out of a hotel, which I still do now. But it was one of those that it was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity and such a cool experience to work with such a rich diversity of skill set all around. And what's cool is that, you know, the truck's done and finished now, and it's one of those that when you watch the episode – there's so much neat content that gets kind of, you know, falls by the wayside just because, I mean, they only have, you know, an hour to show, you know, an episode. And that was actually an episode that was broke up over three separate, or that build was over three separate episodes. And I mean, even then, you know, some stuff just fell out of content. Hopefully they'll make like a behind the scenes or like a cut tape, because it'd be really cool to see, or for everyone else to see kind of what we got to see as the build actually came together. So
that's cool that you were able to actually pull all that talent together and everybody worked out and got along, because that's kind of the risk you take when, you know, you bring in a bunch of guys that haven't really worked together before.
A lot of alpha males.
And yeah, a lot of alpha males all in the same spot. And, you know, as we've seen before, especially in the TV show setting, sometimes that blows up in your face and it doesn't work. But obviously in this situation, that was completely not the case, because what you guys ended up creating was absolutely just gorgeous. Hands down gorgeous. 100%.
Yeah, that truck really was awesome.
Yeah, and actually, yeah, real quick, the funniest thing that I think no one will ever know except for, you know, me and Tom and obviously the guys that were involved that will tell the story is that, you know, usually when you're working, when it's a TV film set, it's typically no noise. You got to be quiet. You know, they got to make sure there's clear audio, stuff like that. But, you know, during what's called your process footage, which is pretty much just B-roll, which is kind of like GoPro footage and stuff like that, you can get music going, you can get stuff like that. Well, Tom will, you know, have to tell you, the funniest thing is that we didn't actually listen to music. We listened to different movies that we have watched through our childhood, from Days of Thunder to Fast and the Furious. And people would laugh because, like, they would walk in and they would look for, like, a projector or a TV going. And they'd be like, man, like, I could have sworn, like, I just heard Days of Thunder. And they're like, wait, you guys are listening to the movie? Like, what the heck is wrong with you guys? And so it's just so funny because, you know, all of us just kind of clicked and meshed. And it's funny because all of us are still involved in a giant group chat. And so, you know, it wasn't something, it was just a build and then it was done. And we all kind of go our separate ways. We still all talk every single day. So, I mean, that side of it's really cool that, you know, I look up to each one of those guys individually. And I was honored to be able to pick and choose all of them. But, you know, after working with a man, like, I consider all of them, you know, really close friends now. So
that's awesome. I can relate to that too, because at my job we quote Talladega Nights, like, literally all night, the whole night. It's just randomly different lines from Talladega Nights. But Tom, bringing the focus to you a little bit, it had been brought up that you had some experience and you kind of more or less got your start in all this through Don Schumacher Racing, correct? How did all that kind of come to fruition? Because, I mean, that's a real name to have behind you on your resume, man. How did you kind of get involved with that?
Well, I actually went to the University of Northwestern Ohio, and I'm actually from Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm on the opposite side of the country. So, you know, when you're out there, that racing isn't as strong as it is in the you know, the South or the Midwest, like, you know, race teams everywhere. So my goal was to work on a race team. So I went to a school that taught about racing and stuff like that. And then luckily, I had a buddy from Cape Cod who worked on Ron Capps' car and said, hey, you need to come in here. You know, they're probably going to let some people go just because they're not performing well. So there's some opening. So then, you know, I got a job at Schumacher working on one of the teams. And then I worked on the Pro Stock motorcycle team for 6 years. And then Don wanted to only focus on fuel cars. So he goes, okay, we're stopping bikes. So if you'd like, you know, you can get a job in the fab shop. And honestly, for now, the way they hire people, the level of skill I had getting hired into the fab shop, most likely you wouldn't get hired because I didn't have that much experience in fab. I went to a 6-week welding class and I learned MIG, TIG and stick and all that crap, but it really was nothing that I go, yeah, it's fun to make stuff, but I want to work on a race team or something like that. So it wound up working out that I got to, you know, they saw me as, hey, you work really hard. You work, you get along with people. Like as Joel said, to get thrown in with a bunch of people and work good and adapt and make the goal happen. You know, I think it's something they saw and they said, all right. So then I wound up getting, you know, taught how to build a race car out of chromoly and thin wall tubing and work with titanium and aluminum and all that crap. So after a while working there, so I worked there for 11 years. And so getting to build, you know, fuel car chassis and headers and all the titanium structure and working with sheet metal and learning how you do all that stuff, a very aesthetic way, but a smart, lightweight, strong way is kind of how I got into doing my art. I would practice after work on welding. And my theory is when you weld something that you want to keep, no matter if it's like, you know, people do them little, whatever they call it, two plates of steel they want to be and they go, oh, that's cool. And you throw it away. But if you weld something, you go, oh, I'm going to practice welding, but I want to keep it in the end. You tend to just weld just a little bit better. And then I started, the byproduct of that was making replicas of cars, like, you know, just silly metal art. And after a while, people were like, oh, that's really cool. You know, you should post that online or you should try to sell that. And the whole, my whole business is absolutely on accident, practicing to learn how to be a better welder, to work on race cars that go 330 miles an hour. So that's where my business kind of came out of nowhere, working at Schumacher and learning the, you know, the right way to do things, not just to weld good, but, you know, when you weld on something that goes that fast and you're trying to make it lightweight but fast, you know, you can't be screwing around. There's a lot of stress involved because, you know, what you build is either going to keep somebody alive or win a race. So either end, you know, it's a lot of stress in that. So yeah, that's where I guess I got into, you know, Joel going, oh, you should come out here and hang out with us and build a truck, which is absolutely out of my realm, you know, because I, you know, build race cars and they go fast, but, you know, you build the minimum to what you need and that's it. On this thing, on this truck, you know, it had so many different elements that I had never, you know, I do sheet metal with my cars, but I don't do car sheet metal. So, you know, the Engel Brothers taught me a ton of like detail work. So those guys are like pretty much badass.
Right on. Well, it's definitely started to pay off for you, especially with your art business, because I'm looking on your Instagram account and I see that you are currently moving into a new building.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, luckily, it's still on the same property as my other shop. It's just larger. It has a nice office. It actually has another office, which if, for some people that don't know, we're going to be having a baby girl in June.
Congratulations.
So that office will be like a nursery. So, you know, because it's me and my wife, if you can believe, we work very well together when we're not yelling at each other. We could have our own little TV show because this is natural drama when your wife and you are both kind of alpha males. But most of the time, she's absolutely right all the time. And that's just, I'm very competitive, so I hate that, that she's right all the time. So that's what we're doing. Yeah, right now, I'm actually sitting in my wife's office that has nothing in it if it doesn't echo too bad. And I have Hemi spiders just sitting on the floor because I don't want them to get damaged, you know, the moving process. But we've been moving the past week and a half, just forklift ride. And when your wife's pregnant, she's not supposed to lift anything, you know, more than 5 or 15 pounds. And she's lifting like 3,000 pounds on the forklift. So she runs the forklift. I pick everything up and we're going, you know, probably 1,000 feet at a time, back to shop. So it's a nightmare because it's like 30 degrees out here. And but things are happening.
I'm super excited for you, man. And as happy as I am for you, I am definitely not jealous of the amount of work it's going to take for you to do this move, because I've seen the pictures of your current workshop and all of the awesome stuff that's in there that you now have to move to this new one.
Yeah, it's not been fun. I've been moving buckets of race car parts, like 5-gallon Lowe's buckets, and they're each bucket's probably about 100 pounds. And Joel knows this. I weigh about 100 pounds, so I'm definitely going to have a smoked back by the end of the night. So It's all right. It's all worth it.
Joel, we met at FabTech last year, and it was absolutely awesome to meet you in person and get to chat with you. But I wanted to ask both of you guys right here, right now, while you're on the show, do both of you plan on hitting up FabTech 2018 this year in Atlanta?
Heck yeah, that's the plan. I mean, I'm one of those that I literally plan like days before. So it's one of those that I won't buy a plane ticket till, I don't know, probably like the Sunday of, but at least right now, tentatively, that's what my plan is. But man, my schedule is so busy with filming and stuff like that I get pulled in like 1,000 directions. So it's almost as bad as it sounds, almost easier for me to like, kind of like mentally make a note of it, like, you know, that I definitely want to go, but in terms of committing to it, it's one of those that I won't know for sure until the day comes. But if I do, it is one of those that, like, I am the person that I will buy a plane ticket, like, you know, almost like a bus pass. Like, I just go up to the to the teller and buy my ticket, and away I go. So that's the plan. It was so much fun. It was crazy being able to meet so many people. And so there's no doubt that I definitely want to go.
Right on. What season are you're filming right now? You said Diesel Brothers, correct?
Yep.
What season are you on right now?
This is the fourth season.
Okay.
Right now.
Okay. Yep. What are some stuff that if you can, whatever you can say that you've been really excited to work on so far with this season?
I mean, I can probably talk about just about anything. I mean, you know, it's one of those that's what's so crazy now with social media compared to even say 10 years ago, where, you know, when you watched a lot of these TV shows, that was the first time you saw, you know, a build get done. You know, use American Chopper as an example. You know, whenever they're building these bikes, the first time you saw the bike was at, you know, it was while you were watching the show. Whereas now, you got guys like Dave Sparks and Diesel Dave, man, they both got over 1 million followers. So, you know, when they post something, most people see it, right. You know, completed well before the episode airs, which the production company hates. They hate whenever those guys do it. But I mean, they're to the point to where they're kind of, I'd say they do what they want,
yeah,
but
they're not no
danger. You know, they're going to post photos of it and they're going to get a slap on the wrist. But, since it's already been posted, we built this really cool 2017 F550 that normally comes with a cabin chassis, and we made it to where it's a 6-wheel truck, and we did it on Air Ride and, you know, made some custom bedsides for it. It's really, really cool. A lot of fun. And plus, it's awesome to work on a new truck because there's no rust, and that's always nice to be able to just kind of pull bolts off. It's no big deal. And then right now we're working on this giant school bus that we're going to put on monster truck tires, and so I'm building a full tube chassis for it. And it's because Dave Sparks bought an island. As crazy as that sounds, it's like a 3,000-acre island. And so it's in the Salt Lake. And so They've got to be able to drive through marshland and stuff like that. And so he wanted to have this giant school bus. And so I just do what I'm told. And so that's kind of what was on the docket this week. And so that's what we're knocking out right now. And we've got a pretty cool drift truck that we're getting ready to hopefully try and start doing. It's like a Peterbilt style semi truck that's going to be slammed and on drift tires. It should be a lot of fun. There's been a couple of renderings of it online. Sleepy Abbey is the person that did the original conception of it, and so we're actually going to turn it into a reality. So the plan is try and call the Engel brothers and Tom back out to maybe try and help out with some of the sheet metal work and do some cool stuff with it. So yeah, we got a lot of really neat builds that we want to do. The problem with, I guess, what I do from like a custom fabrication standpoint is that it takes time. You know, it's not where you look at a couple of reality shows, you know, use an example like a Street Outlaws or something like that, where, man, you can film a whole season in, you know, a week, as long as you don't have any catastrophic failures with the cars, because, you know, it's pretty much just showing the racing, and, you know, as long as they're doing, you know, maintenance to the trucks or to the cars, then, you know, they don't have any major issues. They can pump out episodes. Whereas with what we do, man, there's just no way around it. There's not a magic wand that you can use to get this stuff pumped out. And so the Discovery Channel wants us to just put episodes out really, really fast. But, you know, we want to make sure the quality is there. So it takes a little bit of time. So they have to try and sometimes taper back on how many custom builds you really get to do per season. They want to try and have a balance between what I call lift wheel and tire builds, which is kind of, you know, your truck, did you see going down the road that your average person can conceptualize actually, you know, having and dreaming of, you know, being able to afford one day, as opposed to like that C10 build that, you know, me and Tom got to build with others. It's one of those that me and Tom will never be able to afford a truck like that. We could build it, sure, for someone else, but it's so far out of, you know, our, you know, realm of reality, but it just takes time to do stuff like that. And sometimes they don't like to wait for that stuff. So we've got some cool stuff that we're getting ready to do, but in terms of how much cool stuff we'll kind of see, and you know, they'll spread it through a couple of seasons, but yeah, I mean, I still run my Overkill company. So Overkill Racing and Chassis is my baby. And so I'm one of those crazy people that works 7 days a week, you know, 16-hour days, like Tom does. And so Tom's one of those, like, I can text Tom at, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning, he's still up, just like he can text me at 2 in the morning, we're still up and we're still in the shop. And so it's too funny. You know, I joke about the fact that we have this, this group chat going, but, yeah, it is literally one of those. It's like, man, you guys are nuts. Like, why are we all, you know, I guess just so addicted to our work, but it's because, man, I love it.
Hell yeah, we all are, man. Yeah, I can attest to that, though, because yeah, so I'll never be able to afford a truck like that either. I can see it, I can build it, but I can pretty much afford my 96 F-150, and I'm good about that.
Yeah.
That's about it.
Yeah, you sound like all of us. So.
Yeah, exactly. But Thomas, no, before we get out of here, I do want to talk to you real quick about I'm looking on your page right now, and I'm seeing that you just made some trophies that, I mean, these things are absolutely gorgeous. Can you kind of get into the backstory on these this trophy here for the Shamrock Classic?
Most of the stuff is all an accident. Like, honestly, when I did my art, I thought I'd be building little cars and little sculptures, and then someone said, hey, could you build me a trophy? And again, it just snowballed and got out of control. And obviously, when you want to run a company, you always have to find ways to make money. And with the trophies, I mean, sometimes they're what I call junk art, where they're just, you're just stacking race car parts and achieving some kind of look or a trophy look. And then sometimes you do nice sheet metal, like, you know, raw material, and get it cut out and come up with designs and stuff. And we've been very fortunate, either connections through motorsports, that people that we know, and we've gotten to do a lot of trophies for like Red Bull and K&N and like a lot of sprint car stuff. We got to do the STP 500 trophy for Martinsville a couple times. And there's just, sometimes it's just cool to see how accidental this stuff works out and who calls you and stuff like that. But with trophies, if you do a good job, they come back next year. They have multiple race events. And then there's always a champion that in racing. There's always a champion of some kind of, you know, sanctioning body. And then you get to do their trophies. And so, I don't know, it's just one of the things. I mean, to me, metal is metal. You know, if you want a car or you want a trophy or a sculpture or even some kind of structural thing to hold up a coffee table or something. So it's all, I don't know. I have not figured. I always think maybe this is as far as I can go. And then you get some random email from Jimmy Johnson or something, and you're like, oh, that's really cool. And the money's, you know, the money's there, you know, people buy stuff, but it's always to see where your art can go or what you build and who owns it. So that's like, that's actually really the cool thing. You know, you have to be serious and pay your bills and make money, but it's always just like a personal goal to see, well, who can, you know, have your art on their shelf, or, you know, what great race car driver just won a race with your trophy. So to me, that's where it's like really at. And like Joel says, I guess theoretically I actually like what I do. So it's easy to work till 2 or 3 in the morning and ignore a lot of important normal stuff that normal people do, like golfing and all that crap. I don't know, or watching sports. I don't know anything about sports. If it doesn't have wheels on it, it's not important.
Right on. Before I let you guys go, thank you again so very much for being guests on the show. And go ahead and plug your social media and where people can find you. Joel, go ahead. You go first, and then Tom, go ahead and do yours.
Yeah, so I'm Joel with Overkill Racing and Chassis. I'm the long-haired guy on the Diesel Brothers TV show. so I guess real quick before I get off, I do have to say one quick thing about Tom.
Okay.
If you think Tom talks fast now, you need to bring him to a Texas Roadhouse. It's got to be Texas Roadhouse, and you got to get him some sweet tea. You get that homie some sweet tea, and he starts hazing the tires. He goes crazy. I mean, talks a million miles an hour. But he's the funniest guy you will ever talk to, because Tom will literally – I mean, I'm about 6'5", like 270 pounds. And after, like, an hour-long conversation with Tom, even I feel like I got abs just because I was laughing so much. So Tom's one of those unique guys that he's absolutely hilarious. But he is genuinely one of the most talented guys I've ever met. And it's just funny because even though he's a little – short squirt, I genuinely look up to him. I'm fortunate now that I consider him one of my really good friends, but it's just that it's surreal for me because, you know, you look at Tom's art for the last, you know, I've looked at it for the last probably 3 or 4 years, and it's just so crazy to know that I talk with this guy, you know, basically every single day. So he's one of my good friends now, and I genuinely look up to him, and I can't wait until hopefully we get to build some kick-ass junk again, hopefully sometime soon.
Now that was an exit, so. Ladies and gentlemen. Wow.
So I'm not going to try and kiss him or anything. But, no. So,
man.
But yeah, no, I mean, I don't know. I guess Tom is truly just one of those. He's a super talented cat from the Don Schumacher Racing side of it. That's like kind of like where I strive to be with my business. And so it's cool when Tom actually shows me photos of stuff that they're doing over there at DSR that, you know, could be proprietary, who knows, but it's kind of cool because it helps me raise the bar as to what I want to do with my work. So that's all I got to say
about
that. But yeah, Jimmy, I mean, for you, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you having both of us on this podcast. It's an awesome podcast. I've listened to every single episode now. Well, I guess I haven't listened to this one yet, but
thank you so very much, man. Thank you.
I know you guys have so much hard work that goes into, you know, building these, you know, podcast platforms, and I hope that you don't think that hard work doesn't go unnoticed, because I mean, as welders and fabricators, you know, some of us only have, you know, a 30-minute lunch break, an hour lunch break, and hopefully I'm not going on too long, but it's perfect because, you know, as a 30-minute break or, you know, an hour-long podcast, it works great because you can usually catch it during your lunch break or sometimes while we're working along. It really makes it go by, make the workflow go by a lot smoother, as well as being able to hear all these unique stories. So to you, I can't tell you how much I appreciate, and I'm genuinely honored to be on your podcast.
Awesome, man. Thank you so very much. That warms my heart. I appreciate that.
Heck yeah.
Tom, go ahead. Plug your social media and where people can find you.
How the hell am I supposed to, like, lay a laugh?
How do you upstage that?
He just, like, blew the field away. He's, like, number one qualifier, and ain't nobody else around. Like, I should even put my stuff back in the trailer.
Okay, oh, that is one other thing, is that Tom makes racing references to everything. So if you're not, like, into drag racing or anything like that, you'll probably never understand half the stuff he does.
Okay, it's like thanking sponsors after a race. I feel selfish even saying, look up Cold Hard Art when Joel just said, like, every nice thing. It's like when you're at your funeral and this, well, you know, I'm in the box and he's talking about nice things about me. How do you go up after him and go, yeah, you should check out my art? And it's just so selfish. But, either way, Joel is a monster. He's got beautiful hair. He's got the biggest heart. He's like a giant teddy bear. We've hugged a couple times. Don't let him lie to you. Like I said, all the dinners, Starbucks breaks after lunch were beautiful. Rental car abuse was perfect. I mean, there's just so much to know about somebody that we can't even talk about because, you know, the legal system will come down on us.
I think Enterprise is still trying to call me on that.
Yeah, I don't know why this door doesn't close. Well, it's probably because the frame recorder is off. I thank you guys. And I know a podcast is not just a copy and paste type thing. You guys got all kinds of detail work and hours to do it. So I thank you for wasting tape or whatever the hell this is recorded on. I'm 37, so I'm a little old with the technology, but I do thank you guys for having us on, helping spread the word of whatever the hell we do that seems cool to some people. I just say thank you. Look up Cold Art, look up Overkill. We joke with Joe. We call him all kinds of terrible things. But inside, we respect the man. He is good for the industry. He makes it interesting. It's good to see that he gets TV time. He gets to show off his skills. You know, he's not one of those people that are stuck in a garage all day. He gets the stuff that he deserves. So he's a cool person. and I'm a loser. I'm short. I got a big nose, whatever. So just follow him. Don't worry about me.
All right, guys. Thank you so very much for coming on the show again. And I look forward to chatting with you guys again. Best of luck in all of your endeavors. Just know that us here, the crew at Arc Junkies, we're 100% behind both of you guys and supporting everything that you guys are doing. And we have our eye on you to make sure that when you're doing something awesome, we're going to talk about it. So until next time, thanks again for coming on the show. And work safe and weld hard.
Thank you. Yeah, much love. Thanks again.